The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
All right, we are here in your beautiful home, Liam. I think it's fair to say here in Ballina. Thanks a million for having me.
No problem.
Have you, you've always lived in and around Ballina, haven't you? You've always stayed put in Mayo.
Yeah, I'm a townie. Was born in and bred in Ballina town. I lived in a street called Corcoran Terrace. The town was divided regionally for the town leagues when we were kids playing Gaelic football and basketball, and we were from the area called the Pats, and we produced an awful lot of good footballers and athletes and basketball players and soccer players out of that area. And in fact, we went 16, the Ballina Stephen Knights went 16 or 17 years on without winning a county title. And we won it in 85. And I think there was 11 or 12 of us from the Pats area, from this one area, on the team that won the county title. So we'd be very proud of our street and very proud of the fact that we're all Pats men. And obviously the McStays were on that team, Porrick Ward, the Gillivarys, all those great players, the Tigers. So we had great times growing up. And about, I think it was about 19 years ago when we got married. We moved out to enemy territory. Now we live in Knockmore, and obviously Knockmore and Ballina at club level would have been serious rivals over the years. But the funny thing was, and I'm sure it's the same in a lot of counties, that we all went to school together. We all went to Muirdex and Moyne College, and we would have played with each other at schools level and enjoyed it and had success at that, and then we would have played against each other at underage level and senior level. And it was very strange because Cross Malina and Ballina and Knockmore, we all live within a 7-mile radius of each other. And there was one time there in the 80s and 90s when we were probably three of the best teams in the country, you know, regularly getting to provincial finals and All-Ireland finals. So we were very fortunate. We had the Gaelic football and the basketball going well when we were that age, when we were in our 20s and early 30s, and it was just a great time.
What was the main pull for you to stay? Was it sport? Was it basketball and the success you were having with that sport?
Well, it wasn't really, because the basketball was going very well, and I played club football, but the club football was only secondary. Football was only secondary. It was only a pastime, you know, to keep me fit during the summer and stuff like that. I was offered a couple of scholarships. In fact, one guy, a guy, Lord rest him now, came, Eddie Burke was his name, the coach of Drexel University, came to visit me for a week, and we had a great time together. And he really put pressure on me to sign for a good Division I school in Philadelphia. And I was sorely tempted. And in fact, when I hurt my ankle before the cup, I think it was in 1990, I think it was. He flew me over, all expenses paid, and I went to the college and was there for 5 days, and they just worked on my ankle for the whole 5 days and nearly got me back in time to play, but the ligaments were too badly torn. But I would have seriously taken up that scholarship or one of those scholarships, but around 1918, 1919, I started playing for Mayo. John O'Mahony brought me in, and my first full game for Mayo was an under-21 All-Ireland final against Cork and Ennis. And I started really getting into it then, and I liked the higher level, and I liked playing with the other guys in the county. And believe it or not, people don't know that, but that was the reason I decided not to go to the States and play ball, because the basketball was going great and we were becoming a very, very good team, and I was enjoying that. But all the managers, fortunately for me in those days, were accepting of the football managers, were accepting of me playing the basketball during the year, and then playing football in the summertime. Now, I always made myself available for the league, but I didn't play in much league matches. I would have played 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there. Most managers wouldn't have started me in league matches. So for me, it worked out great, but it obviously that can't happen now, because I suppose the game is so demanded, so much time, you know, spent off the field, studying tape on your own, and, you know, all that conditioning work that they have to do, that you wouldn't be able to do it now. But I was lucky that I could do it then.
Because it's been a big talking point this year, Liam, the whole idea that the Mayo players are at home now and they're not travelling over and back from Dublin. So when did you notice that this was starting to become a thing? Was it actually starting to come up during your playing days, the fact that people would start to leave Mayo but still trying to get back to play, and all of a sudden you had players dotted around the country?
Yeah, it was very difficult. We've always experienced that. We'd always have 8 or 9 guys in Dublin, and they would have to train during the week. two nights a week and then come down and work with us at the weekends. And that's not ideal. It's not too bad if they're in college. But when we had that mature team that we had in 89, they got to the All-Ireland final. Most of the guys that were living in Dublin were working in Dublin. They weren't in college, so they weren't getting home at all. Like, they weren't getting home for the summer. So we all would be without five or six, seven, eight guys for training during the week. And it was always a hindrance. And your point is very well made on that. The Mayo have been very, very good now for a number of years. We've been knocking on the door for a long time. And I think we've played in 10 All-Ireland finals now since 89, and six or seven of them, eight of them have been in the last 15, 20 years. And so we have been good, but we were supposed to be in transition because we've lost so many players in the last 2 years, and we've been in the All-Ireland final last year and won the All-Ireland final this year. And I don't think many people expected that with all the guys that we lost. But I would agree with you 100% that the fact that these kids are at home and not in college and have everything is shut down, so all they have time to do is condition themselves and get themselves right to play when they're allowed back to play. And I'd say these guys have, you know, they've eaten, slept, drank Gaelic football and Mayo for the last 18, 19 months, and it's paying dividends now.
How happy would you be to see something like that sustainable into the long run? Because, like, we've spoken quite a lot about rural depopulation and all that down through the years. You'll have seen it firsthand, maybe even basketball in Ballina is emblematic of it. The good old days are long in the rearview mirror. How much would you love for a sort of rekindling of a place like Ballina on that sort of level, for example?
Well, this remote working, I think, is a necessity for rural towns. You know, you have a town like Ballina. We had a top-class basketball team. We don't have any more because everybody goes away to school or go to college or goes away to work. You know, Ballina, Cross Malina, as I mentioned earlier, and ourselves, were three of the biggest clubs in Connacht, if not in the country. Knockmore won the county championship last year, which was great to see, but Cross Malina are operating out of Division 2, and we've lost two county semi-finals. So we're not the powers that we used to be because we just don't have the players around during the week. Now, most of them would be students, but they're still not here till you know, April, maybe even May. So you're working out January, February, March, April, maybe, with doing practically no training during the week. The guys come home on Friday, they're tired, you do a light session and you maybe have a league match or a challenge match on a Sunday, and they go again, and that's not enough to sustain and to develop a team that's capable of winning a county title and maybe going on like we used to say 15, 20 years ago. And you see the teams in the Midlands and up around Dublin, they seem to have better facilities, and they have their guys at practice, you know, Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday. So they're getting double the amount of work done as a group as we would be, say, here in North Mayo. So, or in Mayo, like, I think it's the same for every club in the county now. So, and there's loads of counties in the same sort of position that we're in. So I just hope that, you know, with this pandemic, you know, terrible and all it was, that there can be some positives come out of it, and that will be allowed, people, young people will be allowed to work remotely and maybe stay at home and be able to practice at home and play at the weekends and make the team stronger simply by their presence.
Yeah, because there seems to have been, certainly during the boom of the last 10 years before COVID, there seemed to be a connection between success in your personal life, yeah, education, yeah, work, whatever it may be, and moving to Dublin or, yeah, something like that. Whereas it does feel that this could perhaps change that perception a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Because we're like, you know, Ballina was a vibrant town 20 years ago. It's still a beautiful town. It's a great town to live in, but it's not near as busy as it used to be. And, you know, you 100 professional couples move back into the likes of a town like Ballina and maybe have to work in Dublin 2 days a week would make an awful difference to a town the size of Ballina, and maybe try and attract more industry and keep our young people at home if we could. And then it'd make an awful lot of difference to the whole community, sports wise and economically and everything. It's nice for families to have their family at home as well. But absolutely, it'd be lovely if that could happen. It'd be one positive thing that came out of this pandemic.
Like I said earlier, there was a boom before COVID. Like, I mean, the west of Ireland certainly felt the crash. Maybe they didn't even feel the boom when it happened. Yeah. So I'm speaking a little bit out of turn there. I'm sure that even places like Ballina didn't really reap the full benefits of the years leading up to 2020.
Yeah, yeah, it has been a struggle now, and you would miss the young people around the town. And you go back to Stephenites on a Tuesday night in January to see training, and there's 16 guys on the pitch, and you know, you count then how many senior players are there, and there might be six, and you just can't develop a strong competitive team that way. And I know it's unfortunate that's the way it is at the moment, but I hope that can, the way it was for the last 18, 19 months, it can stay that way for the most part. And that we, the teams like, big teams like, I know I'm a bit biased, but the big teams in the North Mayo area and in general can will have more people back, and that they'll be available for training, and it will develop that way again.
What is the situation with basketball in Mayo at the moment?
It's not near as strong as it was. We still have a club. It's an underage club. We go as far as under 16. We produce some good players. The last good group we had, in fact, was Conor Loftus's group. Conor would be about, 27, 28 now, I would say. So it would have been 10 years ago. We had a very good underage group there. They lost an All-Ireland final schools title. But out of the 12 on that roster, 9 of them went away to college. So we figured that even though they were very keen to play National League basketball, there was no point in us bringing in 2 Americans and having maybe 3 senior players at home with 2 Americans, 5 in total, and maybe 7 away, and only coming home tired on a Friday night. So it wasn't sustainable. And you know, in basketball at Super League level, you're going to be spending some money, especially if there's some professionals in your ranks. So it just was something we couldn't do. But maybe down the road, if this system comes into place where people are living back in their hometowns, maybe we could get back into having a senior team in the town, which would be absolutely marvellous again, because really in the winter time, when there's not a lot going on, you have a National League team that's going well, it really does pass the winter for the supporters and the players.
Definitely. Is Loftus the only basketballer of note in this squad? Well, obviously Edna O'Shea played a bit as well, or are there others that we don't know about?
Well, Pádraig O'Hara. Oh, yeah. Pádraig would have played with us at underage level, and like I remember I was in my 40s, I'd say, at the stage, and he was asked to come up and train with us at senior level, and I was marking him one night, and I switched after about 3 minutes. I said, this fella's too quick for me. He's running all over the place. I was exhausted covering him. So he was always a great athlete. His brother Benji played as well, never thought I'd see him at the level he's at now, Gaelic football. He didn't play a lot of Gaelic, kind of like myself. He would have loved basketball, but he's turned himself into a fine athlete. He's very, very strong mentally, very, very strong physically. And about 5-6 years ago, he started playing for the Stephenites. I coached him 1 year with my brother-in-law, a guy called Shane McCann, with the Stephenites. I was in helping out, and he did very well that year, about 6 years ago, and he's just kind of took off since then, and he's a vital member of that Mayo team now, and it's great to see it. But he would have been a very good basketball player. And Conor was a really good basketball player, a very good point guard, you know, very intelligent player, you know, like the way he is on a football field, doesn't make many mistakes, and is a good leader as well. So they'd be the only 2 I'd know besides Aidan. Yeah.
Would someone like Conor Loftus have conversations with you personally down through the years? I guess because the parallel is there, I guess, with his position, with the fact that he's a good basketball background as well. Have you had, I guess, much communication with players like him and this current crop of young players, and I guess in Loftus's case, kind of middle of the career age players?
Yeah, well, it's gone very secretive now. You meet a guy in the street and you ask him about such and such a guy is injured, and he tell you, I'm not sure how he is, you know. So I don't see Conor much now, but he's in Dublin. I met him a few times. I met him at a game in Tala in Dublin there recently. His sister was playing, and I had a chat with him afterwards. But it wouldn't be much about football, and the guys wouldn't be ringing me asking me for advice. I think it's very in-house and keep everything to themselves. So you wouldn't hear much now, you know. This Mayo team are very, very quiet. Like it's a testament to them, really, how involved they are together and how tight they are, that nothing really comes out from the camp. We really don't know how Oisin Mullen is. We don't know how Killian O'Connor is. You'll just hear rumours, but you'll hear nothing from the players. And as regards getting in contact with you would talk to them, but you wouldn't. The last thing I'd say the lads want to talk to you about is football or sport, like you know, how they're going in, sure, in their when they're in with the county.
How big a problem was that before that became the case?
There wouldn't be as much video analysis. There wouldn't be as much strategy when we were playing. There wouldn't be as much. I don't think there was ever a situation where you'd pick a team and 3 guys wouldn't be playing. I can't ever remember, or I couldn't imagine a manager coming up saying, "We're putting you down as a starter, but we're not starting you." you know, we're starting such and such a guy. So it was very, the game was very fluid in our time, and it was very much, we'll get you in shape, we'll play this brand of football, we'll move the ball this way, you know, we'll hit the full forward line early, that's what we're doing. And there was no real major secrets about it, whereas now it's gone very technical, and a lot of it is cloak and dagger, really. You know, you can't even go to a game sometimes. You can't get in to see an in-house game, you know, a scrimmage game between a team now. That's just the way it is. Whereas before, when we were playing, there could be 300 or 400 watching an in-house game. So it's totally different now. It's way more tactical. And, you know, the way the keepers are playing now and the way the defences are set up, you know, they're dropping this guy, they're dropping that guy. This guy is helping on the weak side. So it's just totally different. But in our time, you could go down the street and you could stand up there and have a coffee with a guy, or sit down and have a coffee with a guy, and you could be talking about the team and going through everybody, like how everybody is going, you know. But it's different now, for sure.
You think there's basically just more to protect nowadays? Yeah. There's more secrets to protect.
Yeah, well, these guys are doing studies or video sessions now, VT sessions for like 3 hours at a time, and they're getting sent stuff on the phone themselves, and they want to know what foot this guy kicked with. Is he kicking 80% with his left? He only kicks 60% with his right. They're gone into that sort of, like American football, they've gone into that sort of detail. And these guys, the new guys now, can't function without that. If you don't give them that sort of detail, they find it very difficult to play. But that's just the way it is. I would like to think that if I was marking you, I'd have you figured out. Well, I suppose it's kind of from a basketball team. I'd have you figured out after 5 minutes. I'd know your tendencies anyway. That I'd figure it out myself, that I wouldn't have to look at you for hours on end on video. You know? So it's changed, but that's just the way it is now.
Has football caught up in that regard then? Because, like, I mean, that's one of the things they say about players like yourself, that you'd better coaching, or that your movement was better, your defending was better because of playing basketball. Has football caught up in with regards to those skills that we used to refer to as basketball skills?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, and you know, a lot of teams would have a basketball coach in just to do like footwork drills, them and defensive drills, and you know, when to help, when not to help, all that sort of stuff. And then when you have the ball in your hands, you know, your head is up early. You don't be soloing into cul-de-sacs, which is very important now. You see that happening all the time, fellas. Just they get by one guy, next thing they get excited, next thing there's three Tyrone fellas around you. You get pummeled, and the ball is gone. That's not good for anybody, especially yourself. So it has got better, but I see loads of guys making defensive errors, and I wonder, like, say, oh my God, how could you make that mistake when you're watching a game? Your footwork was all wrong, your body position was all wrong. You know, who's coaching you? You know, that kind of way. So, but I think that's just the nature of the beast, fellas. Guys make mistakes. Why did you go and help there when you and left your man open? But there is a lot more coaching going on, and there's a lot more coaching going on the defensive side of things, and things have improved the last 2 years. It was dour enough there, you know, when Pat was on about Puke football. It was dour enough there for long enough, and he was right. But there's high scoring games now. Teams are scoring goals again. Teams are looking up now and hitting full forward lines and not being outnumbered like 6-2 because of so many fellas back. So the product is a bit better now, Owen, than it was, say, 5 or 6 years ago, for sure. And teams are really going after it. And, you know, the Dubs did it. In fairness, over the years, Mayo have done it. Tyrone are doing it kind of now as well. Kerry have always done it. So it's, and you know, Donegal are playing a good, and Armagh, yeah, are playing a good brand of football now. And it's lovely. I love to watch Armagh playing as well. And, you know, if Galway can get their act together, they're that type of team as well. But I think offensively, teams have got better now, and that negative blanket defence isn't working anymore. That there has to be a little bit more sophistication than just getting guys back, because these good teams will pick you apart.
So that seemed to me at the start of the year like a tactical shift or an approach shift. But is there a coaching change as well, Liam? Are you noticing the skills of players changing as well as the approach from the manager, for example?
Well, I would say Curry and Dublin, Donegal would have been very good at Galway, would have been good at as well, even though they haven't got the results they would like. But the only way you can stretch a team is with good pace, good spacing, and then good ball movement. And if you can kick the ball from your defence out, it takes those extra defenders out of it. And I think that's what you see teams doing. Your cornerbacks, your halfbacks have to be able to kick past the ball now. And that kick pass out the wing is the easiest pass in the game. So I think they're working on, when you win the ball, getting width and then moving the ball at pace and getting it up to that full forward line before the defence is set up. And the good teams are doing that now. And you'll see that a lot on Saturday, because both teams now will defend with everything they have. They'll defend with a fair bit of clarity and understanding, and then they look to break.
Because that was kind of one of the things that, that kind of popped to mind when he talked about that, that there is this, I guess, more attacking approach around the country, and yet the All-Ireland final this year could be one of the lowest scoring finals in recent years. That's obviously down to the defence. So what makes these two defences so good on Saturday evening?
They're both very, very similar. Mm. Both mad aggressive, both athletic, and both teams are good tacklers. The Mayo forwards are serious tacklers.
And is that down to coaching, Liam? Or like, can you coach that level of tackling, or would those guys have been identifiable from young age as great tacklers anyway?
Yeah, well, it's all about footwork and body positioning, and you would imagine that they would have been doing this, and you have to work on it over and over again. Like, you do drills without the ball, then you do drills in one-on-one situations, then you do three and threes, and then you have to blow the whistle. This didn't happen in my time because we had to be running all the time and working on our fitness. Now you don't do that. Like, you're expected as a county player to do that fitness level. And you blow the whistle and say, Owen, what are you doing there? You know, your body position is all wrong. Why did you come in from that angle? You know, you gotta get a low stance. You gotta get your body in front of the man. You gotta make yourself big. You gotta hit him, and you gotta push him back and push him into the help. All that sort of stuff. You would imagine the top teams are doing it, so you'd imagine that's going on. Maybe the lesser teams haven't got that quality of coach, and then when you keep practicing that, guys will get better. You have to work on their lateral movement, you know, their footwork. You know, you have to work on their on the technique of it. You know, not crossing your legs, not going for mad blocks when you have no help. You know, all that sort of stuff is important. And then you can see like the Mayo guys, the Jeremy O'Connors and Young Donoghue and these fellas and Mickey Crines, they're all good tacklers. But the big thing for me is, if you're not brave and you're not prepared to let the guy that's coming at you into your chest, you won't be a good tackler. And they're the fellas that foul a lot. Because when you're coming at me, I have to present myself in a low stance, and I got to try and gobble you up in my chest, and I got to let you in here, and then I try and push it back, maybe get you onto your weak side, force a touch off you and see, can I get that deflection and put the ball on the ground, and then we'll go like dogs and get it off you. But some guys don't like doing that, and you see them putting their hand in at the last minute, and then they get caught for the foul. And that's just bravery. It's very difficult to deal with that, but it does happen. I see it happening all the time, that they want to tackle properly, but they're not prepared to take the hit into the chest and stop the defender in his tracks and maybe turn him onto his weak side or whatever. Doesn't happen now. You won't see that happening too much on Saturday, but it does happen in games, especially at the lower level.
Right. So it's all about the arms. It's about keeping the arms away from
positioning and not crossing your legs and having a good stance and good strong footwork, good strong core. And you have to be brave. You got to hit.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the good tacklers hit. You look at Lee Keegan. He'd leather you. And I know I think he had two hip operations, and he's Paddy Durkin. They just love the contact, and they're the good defenders. So they have the technique, but they have the bravery as well. And you do need the bravery. The guys that are fouling, you see their arms coming up. They're protecting themselves, but they're giving away a soft freeze.
You've said there that this is one of the most insulated camps Mayo has ever had. So this is carte blanche for you here. What do you expect in terms of any potential curveballs on Saturday?
We'd all be hoping that Oisín Mullen would play. Aidan O'Shea maybe at full forward, try and go direct, put that full back line as we talked about earlier under pressure, try and get an early score or two. The Dublin or the Tyrones, the Donegals and the Monaghans, you don't want to go behind against. So if we find ourselves in the position we found ourselves against Galway on or Dublin, I think against Tyrone we're in big trouble. So we can't afford that. So we have to be real aggressive from the start. We can't be going around, you know, lackluster and passive early on. Can't be 6 points down at halftime. That is crucial. So 2 points down or 2 points up is fine, because Mayo have been absolutely outstanding in the second half of those games. So those energy levels and that composure and hunger and will to win is there. But don't come out flat now in the first half, because just the certain teams, and their northern teams predominantly, the good northern teams, if you fall behind, they just know how to suck the life out of the game, you know, force you into tough shots from outside the high percentage range, turn the ball over on you, and then hitch on the brake and keep that 5 or 6 point lead that there's nobody better than the three teams I mentioned. So maybe Aidan O'Shea full forward, maybe he was taken off the last day, maybe do a Peter Canavan out, maybe take him off with 10 minutes to go, ice him down, get him back in then in the second half, because Mayo have to finish strong as well. But we have finished strong in all these other big games, but I think it's going to be very, very tight. I think two very, very tough teams, both mentally and physically, that won't bend a knee for anybody. I think it's going to be attritional. I'd say, guys, there could be one or two sent off. It's going to be very, very hard to control your emotions early on, especially the physical players, the real aggressive players, and there's a lot of them out on the pitch. And our guys need to be very, very careful. Like, it's very hard to be at fever pitch and really aggressive and not make a mistake, a stupid mistake with a high tackle or swing an elbow back, because I believe it's going to be that type of game. It's going to be two teams really, really go banging heads off each other, you know.
On a week like this, Liam, I know you're obviously involved with Athlone at the moment, and that's your coaching gig at the moment. Do you miss the buzz of Intercounty on a week like this with all the hype and all the conversation around a county like Mayo?
No, I don't. No, I've been involved in it a long time. I played for 12, 13 years, enjoyed every minute of it. I coached, obviously, Mayo with John and George to an All-Ireland final. It was great with a very young team led by the Mortimers, Trevor and Andy and Alan Dillon and James and Alan, of course, was there, and David Heaney. Great, great group of lads, great fun. And I've been with with Cav, and I've been with Clare, I've been with a lot of teams. And I have to say right now, maybe I'm getting old, you know, maybe I'm just tired, but I have to say now, working with a bunch of young fellas now, real young team from Athlone, is a breath of fresh air. It's really nice. And right now, sitting here in front of you, I couldn't see myself rushing back to intercounty football anytime soon, that's for sure.
No, there's a big old merry-go-round of things happening this summer, or this winter, I should say, when it comes to vacancies. Your prediction then, finally, Liam, for this Saturday?
I think it's 50-50. And I think that's all you can ask for in an All-Ireland final. I think if you have a 50-50 chance of winning it, you're in good shape. And I would predict that we'd win it if we start well. We can't afford to be 4 or 5 points down at halftime. So what I'm saying basically is, Owen, if we're 2 points up or 2 points down, at halftime we'd win it.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.